Meeting and go to discuss leases. Sarah, please.
Thanks, Tom. So we'll be talking about Agenda Paper 3 today, which discusses the consequential amendments to be made to IAS 40 as part of the leases project. The 2013 ED proposed that right-of-use assets arising from property leases would be in the scope of IAS 40 if the property otherwise met the definition of investment property. This would constitute a change from existing requirements, which require lessees to apply IAS 40 in accounting for property held under a finance lease that meets the definition of investment property, and permit lessees that measure investment properties at fair value to apply IAS 40 in accounting for property held under an operating lease that meets the definition of investment property. Accordingly, under the proposed amendments, lessees which currently apply operating lease accounting for leases of investment property would instead be required to, at a minimum, disclose fair value information for right-of-use assets associated with those leases. Most of the feedback on the 2013 ED was supportive of the proposed amendments to IAS 40, although there were some concerns raised about the cost associated with those proposed amendments. On balance, the staff continue to recommend that IAS 40 be amended as proposed in the 2013 ED for the reasons described in the staff analysis section of the paper. With that, I will hand it over to the board if there are any questions. Yep, Pat.
I don't want to push any of your buttons this morning.
We're very fashionable
as
today.
As much as I like them. the question I have is, at the end of paragraph 8, would it be reasonable to conclude that if a subleasing activity is immaterial, that there wouldn't be really much of a cost to comply here? And it wouldn't be relevant. So the concerns that people are raising about accidental lessors, couldn't that all be dealt with in the context of materiality?
Yeah, no, I think it's fair to say that if it is immaterial, then there wouldn't be a cost associated with measuring these.
And so I'm in agreement with the staff's proposal. I think it's quite sensible and reasonable. And it, to the extent this is material information, I think it adds value.
Yes, Gary.
I think I'm generally supportive where you are, but question just on the act. I am a bit concerned on accidental lessors. Pat had just mentioned materiality. They would also be eligible, I'll call for the 1 year rule, you know, or something, you know, the 1 year exemption or the short term lease exemption as well into this, or is this so IAS 40 so different as it wouldn't make it into it?
So you're saying if you only leased out if you had a right of use asset for 1 year, there would be the exemption.
That's a common, you know, sort of exit strategy out of buildings you might own. You know, it is a short term lease while you're vacating it or something. You don't want it to become accidental. So the 1 year rule exemption for short term leases would be applicable.
Because the 1 year is in the lessee guidance. It's not, and I think Gary's talking about the lessor perspective.
If I'm right, he's talking about lessee because he's saying if I had owned a property and decided that I want to, you know, I no longer need it, I'm going to sell it. But, you know, I've already got a sale agreed, but I just need to have a very short-term lease, you know, just to allow me time to vacate it. So as a lessee, I might have a short-term lease.
Doc?
Yeah, thank you. I disagree with the staff's recommendation. I think, actually, what we are going to do is we are going to change the permitting operating lease to use IS 40 to require the IS 40. That means every single operating lease, you have to comply with IS 40's fair value measurement. So at least you have to. Still, if I misunderstood, I just want to clarify. Even if this small operating lease, you have to at least disclose fair value.
Well, again, materiality would come into play, assuming that you met the definition of investment property.
Yes, yes.
So that you're only holding that property for rental income.
So you have to disclose the fair value anyway. That would be a requirement anyway.
So just to clarify, Tag, it's not that for every existing operating lease of real estate you will have to do this. It's only in the scenario effectively where you've ended up subleasing that, you initially thought you've ended up subleasing that out, and not even in every scenario just when you enter into a sublease. It's really only therefore when you meet the definition of investment property, which says that it has to be a property held to earn rentals or capital appreciation or both. So it's only in those scenarios.
Yeah, but actually the purpose of IS 40 is to be in a sense identical, to make it identical to the property which is owned and property which is leased, and the information of the capital appreciation. I do understand the purpose of IS 40. However, right of use asset is not sellable asset in normal circumstances. So I do understand the capital appreciation information is useful to users, but in reality, those information is not very essential because they cannot sell right of use asset. So if it's a financial lease, it's a substantial purchase, it's agreeable to require the fair value information. But when it comes to requiring operating lease, I think it's a little too much, because the right of use asset itself cannot be, is not sellable, and actually eventually there is no
subleasable, which is the same as selling.
I think sublease is not really selling. Of course you could say that you sell the right of use asset to as a sublessee, but it is not actually selling. But you have to calculate the based on the cash flow and measure it. You don't have the market price of the right of use asset.
I think that possibly as well there are one or two. I agree that a lot of the time, of course, as you're saying, you maybe can't strictly speaking sell it, but there certainly are some longer term leaseholds. That happen certainly in the UK and other places that can be, I don't know, 80 years, 90 years, 99 years, where I think you really can sort of effectively sell those leaseholds, and often people pay up for
the life. It totally depends on the jurisdiction and the practice of economy. So say for example in the UK, maybe there is something like the market where you can sell the right of use, but there are lots of jurisdictions where selling right of use is not practical. So in that case, requiring to disclose fair value could provide good information, but the question is it really essential? Because we are requiring it. Eventually we are saying this is essential information. I don't think it is really essential, so I can't agree with staff's recommendation.
Martin?
On the same note, because I find it difficult to come up with fair values of a right of use asset, at least in some markets. I don't know if in Germany you have any, for example, kind of fair values of right of use assets. Maybe in the UK, if you have lease terms with 80, 90 years, it's a different situation, and maybe I understand that. But and therefore, I'm a little bit concerned regarding if you accept, especially for this accidental lessors, that you also requiring then, if you don't apply then fair value accounting, but you have to disclose fair values. And I think at least what we have to do really, what you have here in 13b, maybe we have to include a little bit of this wording in the basis for conclusion, that we think, okay, maybe they don't meet the investment property definition. And I think regarding this disclosure is, I think also maybe we can include something in this kind of accidental lessor in many cases, I would assume it is not really material, and therefore, I think they don't have to disclose this kind of fair values.
Sorry, Matt, what was your first point? You mentioned
in 13B, we give some guidance. We see, okay, that in many cases, I think we think, okay, this kind of accidental lessors would not meet the definition of an investment property, and therefore they don't have to. And I think it would be good in, if in the basis we can use this kind of word in an additional say that also with this accidental lessors, in, I think in many cases they don't meet the materiality thresholds and then don't have to come up with fair values for this kind of things. Because as Tuck said, I think in many jurisdictions there it's very, very difficult to come up with this kind of fair values, and cost benefit is a problem here.
I agree with that. Philippe?
Yeah, I think it's more or less the same point. And I have a further question. If by this requirement a lease, operating lease of an investment property is under IS 40, so you have a choice of cost or fair value measurement, but does it apply to the wall? And let's assume a company has both investment properties that they own and others that they have under a lease. Assume they decide to fair value the one they own because there is a market price. It is easy to do, but there is no market price for the ones under a lease because there is no market for a right of use. Is it possible under this proposal to say the ones that are owned are at fair value and the ones that are under a lease are at cost? Or the decision to have some at fair value implies that the rest goes to fair value, which I think is inappropriate because I think it's a mechanical consequence, whereas the two assets are of different nature. Own property is not the same as this property, although we said that right of use is an asset. I don't disagree with that, but still it is not full property, full ownership. So because of different nature, I would say under IS 40, it should, if we bring leased property into IS 40, to say, well, if there is no fair value for right of use, let's use cost and try to disclose some fair value. And I have some questions about this notion of partial fair value in 15. Here, you say you measure only part of the fair value, i.e. Only the one which is recognized as a liability on the balance sheet, and you try to do the fair value of that bit. I don't think it's real fair value. A fair value is for the asset, right of use, not for part of that.
Yep.
So I have reservations about this idea of this relief that you propose here. But so let's assume I don't have a fair value for that leased asset. Why should I be forced to do fair value just because I had a fair value available for my own assets, which I did fair value?
So Philippe, to answer your question around that, is the proposal is not to differentiate in measurement between owned and leased. Therefore, if you are in IS 40, you have investment property that you own that you choose to use the fair value model, we would be saying that you do the same thing for your right of use assets. And the only, I suppose, I understand what you're saying, only to be fair, and I'll look at Sarah if I'm incorrect here, is that any of the feedback that we had about concerns about cost, it didn't in any way come from people who already apply the fair value model in IS 40, because the people that do that tend to be, you know, the property lessors, the REITs and otherwise. And I think they've got reasonably sophisticated systems in place to do the fair value measurement. And obviously even depending on, you know, your leased asset could potentially be easier to fair value than an owned asset, possibly, if you know, because it's a shorter time frame and actually you might be able to come up with more.
I'm a bit concerned about the possible negative consequence that because there is no market price for right of use, so I don't do fair value, hence I have to stop doing fair value accounting for the ones for which there is a fair value reference on property. That's a possible consequence of this similarity or uniform requirement here. Yeah. I think we have to consider carefully that risk.
I agree with the staff recommendations. I think it's a logical consequence of the change in the lessee accounting. And also, IS 40 already requires those with finance leases, well, sort of requires and allows those with finance leases to be treated in the same way as an owner of property, which was something requested. And I think it's a natural extension of that model now that we've changed the accounting for leases generally. Having said that, I think it is important to emphasise the materiality aspects of it. I think that the clarifications we make in IS1 should be helpful in that regard as well. And also, I would agree with Martin that emphasising the point in 13B is important, because picking up IS 40 and looking at the definition of what an investment property is, again, it really struck me that in many cases I wouldn't have thought that I would naturally conclude these people were in this category just because they had subleases in place. And so I think we should emphasise that and encourage, you know, a sensible application of the definition. But other than making a split between types of leases, which we're not doing in the project, I don't see another way of dealing with this.
Chang Wu.
Thank you. Paragraph 14, that analysis of that so very logically analyzed on this kind of accidental lessors. The step analyzed, even though for those accidental lessors, they can calculate the fair value very easily. So I am concerning about the Martin's and Tuck's comments you are saying. They're very difficult, so it's a really difficult to do, apply this and a new requirement. But based on, you know, the step analysis, it's not so difficult, because you know the all the information to calculate the fair value based on the present value method. So I'm saying, you know, which one is correct? And I'm saying I'm perfectly, you know, to agree with the step analysis. So, but you are saying a different perspective, so it's quite difficult to make a conclusion.
And I think what paragraph 14 was discussing was when there was kind of a plain vanilla lease, yes, contract where you don't have any options or variable lease, right, payments. Because I think a big area of cost could be when you do have those options, yes, or variable lease payments that aren't included in the liability. You will need to fair value those, and there won't be, you know, kind of the straightforward projections of the cash that you expect to receive. And I think to the points that Tuck and Martin raised, you know, and this comes through in the comments we've received and kind of the jurisdictional splits between those two, there will be different costs depending on kind of how developed different markets are. But what paragraph 14 was meant to focus on was if you have a relatively straightforward lease contract without, you know, the things like options or variable lease payments, it should be easier to find a fair value of those types of right of use,
yes,
assets.
Yes. Can I see who supports the staff recommendation?
12-2.
Okay.
Right,